The day the boys went missing, it was November 10th in 1951.
I should have went with them. I know that. I mean, there's no way to get around that.
She says, oh my God, these boys were missing. So they all went down there looking, no sign of them. And there hasn't been a sign of them since.
Three kids missing, so there's a family of six, and then instantly it's cut in half, and now you only have three. You know, and where did these boys go? They went somewhere.
I'd like to make a plea to all you people to help us find our boys. If you just look everywhere, no matter where it is, just look everywhere, in your basements, in your attics, any place, they could be there.
I'm Jack Elhi, and this is Long Lost, a new investigative history series from Twin Cities PBS. I'm a longtime freelance writer who, over the years, has covered hundreds of stories on all kinds of topics. Usually, when I'm done with a story, I just move on to the next. But there is one story, the story of the missing Klein brothers, that has stayed with me and dogged me for the past 20-plus years. It all began in 1997 when I picked up a newspaper and saw an ad that said, seeking information about the three missing Klein brothers, Kenneth Jr., David, and Danny, who disappeared in November 1951. If you know anything, please call. And then a phone number was listed. The person who answered when I called was Betty Klein, the mother of the boys. When I met Betty, I would never have guessed her to be someone who had gone through an unimaginable family tragedy. She was warm. She was expressive. She was even cheerful. As I sat with her and her husband, Kenneth, at the kitchen table of their farmhouse, she plied me with a snack. Cookies, I think. She thanked me for coming, and I remember the warmth of her steady gaze. Then, after not too long, she brought out a box full of stuff. Newspaper clippings, police reports, and notebooks full of notes. Bringing out that box changed her. Now, she was a frustrated, determined advocate for her lost boys. Hearing Betty talk about the boys was one of the most moving experiences of my life. I was listening to a mother describe the worst loss you could possibly imagine. It was an old loss, but that made it feel even more painful. And yet, she expressed no despair or anger. I had trouble understanding that. I left them with one thought. Out there is something remembered, something buried, something lost, or something hidden that's a key to the future of the Klein family. Even more amazing is that without that key, the Kleins have somehow struggled ahead and tried to put their family back together. They are doing something that I probably couldn't. The strength of Betty and Kenneth Klein is unforgettable. Society completely let them down. So I did some research, wrote about it, but that was not the end. I kept in occasional touch with Betty and Kenneth after my first article was published. They thanked me for writing their family's story. I wanted to know if there were any new leads, but for a long time, nothing happened. Then, years later, I got an email from a Wright County Sheriff's deputy.
Yes, my name is Jessica Miller. Born and raised in Minnesota, northwest of the suburbs. Started thinking about a law enforcement career early on, first in my family to do so.
And Jessica told me that she was now investigating the case, long after the Minneapolis police had closed it. This was in 2013. She was circumspect and initially did not tell me why she was interested in the case or why she wanted a copy of my notes and research. She had seen the story I'd written back in 1998 and wanted to know what I still had. I felt protective of the Klein family and my work. Before I'd give her anything, I had to know why she was asking for it.
I mean, it's a very compelling case. You know, three kids missing. You know, this was a family. They had four boys, and then dad, Ken, and mom, Elizabeth. And so there's a family of six, and then instantly it's cut in half, and now you only have three. You know, and where did these boys go? They went somewhere. And they were never given those answers. And I couldn't imagine going through something like that, losing three kids and never having an answer, even all these years later.
She explained her investigation in her next email. Then her intentions shone through. I sent her what I still had, and I knew that this story was much bigger than I had imagined it. Jessica is an all-too-rare person who can convey her caring, her concern, and thoroughness all by the way she does her job. I immediately felt her respect for me and my work, as well as the outcome of this case. The Klein family was lucky to have her on their side.
The day the boys went missing, it was November 10th in 1951. The three younger boys, Danny, David, and Ken, ages 8, 6, and 4, were begging their mom to go to the park. They wanted to go to play at the park. And she kept telling them no. Because Gordy, the oldest brother, had a knife sheath and he was fixing it. He was sewing it back up and he wanted to get that done. They begged and begged and she said, okay, you can go for a little bit. And then Gordy was going to go and catch up with them.
This happened on a chilly Saturday afternoon. Betty Klein, the mother of the boys, was at this time 7 months pregnant with her fifth child. And her oldest child, Gordon, who was 9 years old at the time, stayed home with her as the younger boys went out to play in the park. Gordon felt a strong bond with his brothers, and at times they were all inseparable. The younger boys looked up to Gordon as their leader.
We were all going to go to the park. That was the plan for the day. And of course, I had a knife case, hunting knife, and it was that time of the year anyway, that had broken out on the side, so I stayed home to fix that, and they went ahead of me. Later on, I went down to meet with them down in the park, and there was a big tree about where there used to be a sandbox there, a great big oak tree, and that's where we always met. And we really hung around that tree. It was on, it would have been the northwest corner of the park, you know, so we'd come down and go right across the street, and there, that was there, and that's where we'd meet. Yeah, I looked all over that park. They weren't there. I sure never thought at that time they could be gone. I know that.
By now, it was close to dinner time. Gordon told his mother he couldn't find his brothers, and Betty became worried. They'd never before failed to come home when they were supposed to. She called her husband Kenneth at work and demanded he return home. Betty made some more calls to neighbors who might know of the boys' whereabouts. They had no answers. Then Kenneth and Gordon went out looking together.
So they went out looking. Family were out driving around, thought maybe they were on their way back somewhere, took a different route. They had other family in the area they called and they checked with, and nobody had seen them and nobody had heard from them.
There's only a few people left alive who have direct memories of the missing brothers or the day they disappeared. Oh, hi, Jim.
Yes, hello.
Thanks for calling in. One of those people is Jim Daniels, the younger brother of the missing boy's mother, Elizabeth Betty Klein.
Well, my name is James Daniels. I was born in 1944. I have nine siblings. Elizabeth Klein was one of them, who was the mother of Kenny, Davy, and Danny Boy, and their older brother, Gordon.
Can you tell us what the boys were like since you spent time playing with them?
Oh, yeah. Kenny was 8, I was 8, and we just had a great time together. Just being kids, you know. I remember we each got one of these little guns that you would pump and it would shoot a ball out of it. But I remember playing war games with them. They were just great kids. I remember going down to the city, stayed with them for a while, and we went to that park. It was only a block down in Kitty Corner from the park.
Where were you when the boys disappeared?
I was living with my mother in Monticello, and my mother just about went insane. She says, "Oh my God, that these boys are missing." See, I have a hard time talking about it.
Betty made the first call to the police, and she was brushed off. The police told her they could do nothing until the boys had been missing for 24 hours. But in fact, they did send some officers out to drive around the neighborhood in the hope of spotting the boys.
I don't have a lot of that in my mind anymore. It's like I pushed it out because it wasn't fun, you know? I think you're kind of lucky when stuff happens when you're young like that. Maybe you push, it's easier for you to hide it someplace. And I know I was really upset, but I didn't know what to do. And then my mom and dad were looking for him, and the neighbors were helping. I do recall, because we've talked about it a lot, how we called the police and they wouldn't help because they hadn't been gone long enough. So we talked about it later on in years about how they, you know, but it was 24 hours. They wanted to wait at least 24 hours. They didn't think there was anything big about three little kids being gone, you know.
Do you have any flashes or images in your mind of your parents at this time, how they were taking things?
Yeah, well, they were going through just plain hell, you know, with it and everything. I think it was easier, way easier on me than it was them, you know. Of course, I realized that as I got older, but yeah, I remember looking into their faces and you know, they just, like the life had been drained right out of them.
Did you hear much from other kids in the neighborhood about how, you know, ideas they had or whether they were scared by it all?
Well, the whole neighborhood was scared, you know, at the time. I can remember that. But as far as the kids and stuff, it seemed like I just kind of blocked all the other friends and stuff that I had out. And my brothers was the only thing that mattered to me, because I don't even remember talking or visiting with another friend after that.
How do you know that the neighborhood was scared?
Well, because they'd come up to the house. There were different neighbors and stuff would come up to the house. You know, we still had a lot of the neighbors. Even for years afterwards, my folks heard from them and stuff like that, you know. And yeah, they were worried.
News about the brothers' disappearance spread quickly, not only through newspaper articles and TV news stories, but kids also found out about what had happened from each other and from their families. One of those kids was Rocky Rockford.
What I do remember, I was 4 years old, I was born in 1947. Well, I knew these kids had vanished, that three boys were missing. And I don't remember if I knew them or not, I'd be a little bit younger than the youngest. And I remember that not being able to go to the park. Your mom had to come and sit with us, you know, and we went to the park every day. I mean, it was right across the street, and kids from all over the neighborhood, you know, would go to the park every day. But, you know, like I say, there were so many kids in the park all the time. And I think I always felt there was safety in numbers. I mean, I don't remember very often having been in the park, well, especially after four, being over there alone. You know, if there were no kids, mom was watching. But she was very protective. So I remember that, as, you know, something's wrong and you shouldn't be in the park alone. So they were very concerned back then.
Members of the Klein family searched for the boys during the entire evening and early morning hours after the brothers disappeared. At various times, Kenneth and Betty, as well as Gordon and relatives, scoured the neighborhood. In the middle of the night, after the boys vanished, the police called the Kleins to ask if the brothers had returned. Because they hadn't, the police soon began formulating a search plan.
And the next day, officers came out and took the report. You know, it's hard to put yourself in the place back in 1951. Things were so different back then. Processes and procedures were very different back then. The efforts that they made in 1951, when I look back at the old reports, were astounding on what they did to try to find these boys.
The media coverage was extensive. The morning and evening newspapers in Minneapolis carried front page stories about it for days, as did the newspapers in St. Paul. Local TV news coverage was then in its infancy, but at least one station sent out its reporters and cameras. This was an important media event. In desperation, the boy's mother, Betty Klein, made an appeal on television. And when you look at it, you see Betty staring into the camera with a hard and broken look on her face. It's heartbreaking to see her vulnerability and desperation, and it's very hard to look away from her.
I'd like to make a plea to all you people to help us find our boys. If you just look everywhere, no matter where it is, just look everywhere. In your basements, in your attics, any place, they could be there. They're awful little to be out the snow. I'm sure they're cold and probably hungry. And I'm sure if you had boys out, I'd do what I could. Well, thank you all. I can't thank you enough. And I'm very grateful for all the help that we've got.
Leads came in. Among them, a woman in the neighborhood, Margaret Goodwill, reported she had seen three boys, one or two of them crying, sitting on the curb near her home the previous day at about 5:30 p.m. At this point, and it's now Monday evening, 2 days after the boys disappeared, the police rounded up a tracking dog and its handler to determine if there was a scent trail to follow. Lance Sauls, the investigating partner of Jessica Miller in Wright County, joins in the conversation.
If I remember correctly, they went to the point where the woman had reported seeing the three boys. And first they went from there to the river. Then they went back there into the Klein's house. That was one of the things we ran into was when we were tracking it out, and it's in a straight line, I think it was 2.9 miles, the route. But if you followed the route the dog gave, it was over 7 miles.
Right.
And that's with a four-year-old in a snowmobile suit.
Yeah, not likely.
It's little Billy from Family Circus doing the little route all over the place. And it
that went right by the police station.
Yeah, it went by a police station, went by landmarks that the boys
would have known.
So they're not lost, they're not. And eventually they end up going north and into down to the river.
Yeah.
And it doesn't make, not picking on them or anything like that, but it doesn't seem like a legitimate dog track.
The track shows them going all over the place. You know, it was a very long walk. How does that strike you as likely that they would have walked all that way?
No, because like I say, we had that area where we always met and things like that, so no, that didn't seem right to me. And as far as the, you know, later on in years when I've thought about all this and everything, you know, what fascinates me about that whole scenario about them going to the river and the hats in the river and all this, you know, when they got all done tracing them, they traced them right across the street from the police station. That's where the dogs ended up, you know. So it wasn't at the river. If they went to the dogs, left the river, went up to the on the other side of our house, north of it, came back, but they all ended up by the Northside Police Station.
The dog led its handler in a meandering path around the city that ended at the Mississippi River at a fallen tree near a pickle factory close to the Lowry Avenue Bridge. Then, brought back to its point of origination at the curb, the dog followed a second, shorter track that passed within a block of the Klein house. Now it was about 4 a.m. on Tuesday morning, more than 62 hours since the boys left home for Farview Park. A few hours later that morning, a railroad worker named Helga Mattson told police he had spotted two knit caps near the bank of the Mississippi at the St. Anthony Dam. Kenneth Klein positively identified them as belonging to his sons. From that time on, the police focused their investigation on the river and grew convinced that the boys had drowned in its icy waters. They lowered the level of the river, probed its banks for evidence or bodies, and flew search planes over the water channel. They would never entertain the possibility that the boys had been the victims of a crime, abducted or worse. The investigators no longer kept their minds open to those other possibilities. Everything changed, much to the astonishment of the Klein family.
Well, yeah, I felt like it wasn't right, but I didn't know what it was, you know, and I couldn't believe, I know they wouldn't have went anywhere without me. They sure wouldn't have went to the river, I can tell you that, because we just never did, unless we all went. That's the whole thing. The river was there, but the river wasn't a draw.
They did close the case and say they drowned in the river after about 5 days. You know, then I don't know what the thought process was on making that conclusion that they went to the river and they drowned in the river when nothing was found. But there's no other answer. There was no other avenue to follow at the time.
The police in Minneapolis said they fell in the river and drowned it. That's the way where they left it, you know. Even though they couldn't find a body, all they found was a cap. I can't be sure it was even their cap they found. You know what I mean? I felt like I had lost my favorite brother. It affected me quite a bit. For being 8 years old, I just remember what those guys all looked like. It was stamped into my brain. I don't think I'll ever... 75 now, so I don't think I'll ever get over it.
There's no getting over it for the Klein family. That's undeniable. There's no resolution, no healing, no happiness in this story, no moving on. What's left for the living Kleins is an explanation, a straightening out of the crooked question mark. What happened to the boys? What do these tragic events mean? The fate of the lost brothers may be unknowable, but maybe something we do in this investigation will help shed light on an answer. Perhaps someone out there knows or remembers something. Maybe we'll give new meaning to a part of the puzzle. At the very least, we can discover how a family survives this kind of catastrophe.
Some photos of the boys together.
No, I've never seen any of these before.
This was they had gotten a boat the summer before, and they would take the boys fishing. That was what they did on weekends together.
Mm-hmm. And so these are the three missing boys, or is Gordy one of these three?
This one is Gordy in the middle, and these are two of the missing. This Gordy in the back.
I see.
This, and here's the three that are missing.
Oh, they look so young.
Yeah, they do.
And happy. And these, this may be the front steps of their Minneapolis house?
Yep, the front steps of the Minneapolis house, mm-hmm. And this would have been the summer just before they went missing.
Hmm. The three youngest look quite alike.
Yeah, they do, don't they? I mean, look at that. These two, they have the same smile. Mm-hmm. Yep. That was Kenny. He's got the smiley eyes.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, here they are. 1, 2, 3, 4 of them.
Yeah. Yeah, their Minneapolis house from 1950.
What might have been. Yeah. They might have kept going.
Oh, they're just cute kids.
Betty Klein strongly believed that her sons were still alive. When I met with Jessica Miller in the fire station, we discussed how Betty had turned to Jessica for help in finding her sons.
She was a very, very sweet lady. She was very kind, very warm. She never got any answers as to what happened to her children. And when she started telling me the story about, you know, what had happened, and they told her that they had drowned in the river and ended it and closed the case, she was convinced that that isn't what happened to her boys. And so she started telling me a little bit about the case, and she said, will you look at what I have? Will you take a look at this? You know, you can't look at a mom who's lost three kids. You know, and I had just had my first child, probably 6, 7 months before this. You can't say no to that. And my first thought was, whatever answer she was given, she didn't want to accept, and what parent, you know, would going through that. The more I read into it and the more information that my partner and I found, I realized, okay, there's something to what she's saying here. There's something that's just not right, that doesn't fit.
On the next episode of Long Lost.
It's one thing if you were brought up and you were told, well, your brothers were taken and we think they're not, you know, we think they were killed. Well, then you wouldn't have a reason to look, search faces. You just search for bodies.
It basically was up to Betty and Bobby to do most of the hunting for them. You know, every lead that they got, they'd follow up on.
It's a difficult case. There's not any physical evidence or scene, you know, to kind of go on. If you think that you're finished with something, you may not be. We've run into that several times with this case. We think we're at the end, and, you know, a couple of months later, something new pops up.
How do you feel about talking about all this? And, you know,
well, I've never been interviewed before.
Yeah.
So in the police work, I've never been on TV. Mm-hmm. I'm doing it as a favor for you.
Thank you.
And I hope you're successful at what you want to do.
Long Lost is the production of Twin Cities PBS, written by Jack L. High and produced by Katie O'Rourke. Original music by Robert L. High. Audio engineering by Terry Gray. Additional sound by Eric Poggle, Joe Demko, and Johnny Hagen. Managing Director Brendan Heenahan. Executive Producer Daniel Pierce Bergen. Production Manager Ted Hink and Production Coordinator Ann Guttridge. Special thanks to the Klein family. Bridget Kelly, Kate McDonald, Brittany Shrimpton, Peter Clowney, Hans Buto, the Minnesota Historical Society and KSTP Archives, and the University of Minnesota Press, publisher of Jack L. High's new book about the Klein case, The Lost Brothers. Funding for this podcast was made possible by the Minnesota Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund and Friends of Minnesota Experience. You can reach us at longlost@tpt.org and visit us at tptoriginals.org/longlost to learn more about the case.